This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 29th of October 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Today I'm joined by the novelist Amanda Craig for this week's literature discussion. We'll be getting spooked by the latest novel from David Mitchell, a ghost story entitled Slade House. We'll take a look at the first book in a new young adult trilogy, The Wolf Wilder, and we'll be previewing Andrew Martin's latest criminal conundrum, The Yellow Diamond. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review, so stay tuned. We're fast approaching Halloween, and so what better way to kick off the show than with a ghost story? Slade House is the new book by David Mitchell, who's best known for his 2004 novel Cloud Atlas, which was, of course, shortlisted for the Booker Prize. Amanda, welcome to the show. Tell us what's going on in this, his latest offering.
Well, this is a very interesting and incredibly creepy book. I don't advise reading it when you're alone in the house. It's like a lot of his previous books in that it's a series of not novellas, as in Cloud Atlas, but almost like interlinked short stories, all around this very spooky place called Slade House, which you get to down a very narrow, rather slummy little alleyway. And there's a door in the wall which leads to an amazingly beautiful garden and house. And what you gradually discover is that this door is only visible every 9 years. But unlike magic doors in children's books, it's not leading to a place that you want to go, because in Slade House are these two soul-sucking twins, and they pick their victim and delude them and entrap them. And it's unbelievably scary, and it's almost like a sort of hallucinogenic experience as you read it, because it starts off, it's incredibly normal. The first story is about this rather sad, bullied, possibly autistic little boy who takes his mum's Valium in order to kind of try and stay calm. And you gradually realise that this game of hide and seek that he's playing with another little boy is a game which is going to end very badly.
Right. How do these twins kind of choose who they bring into this house?
Well, they're people who are particularly sensitive to them. So it's this is the bit which I'm less happy with about the book, because David Mitchell, as those who've read him will know, is both a really good literary writer and storyteller, and a genre writer. So he went with Cloud Atlas, for instance. You know, he was mingling all sorts of, you know, really quite science fiction ideas with some very fine writing, which I think is very exciting. In this one, he's mingling what seems to be realist, naturalistic writing with horror, which is great. But then there's this kind of science fiction element, and I think that causes quite a lot of dissonance by the end. I mean, some people are going to absolutely love it. If you love this kind of thing, you're going to gobble this book down. If you're a more mainstream writer, you'll think, damn, you know, the moment you start getting things like soul suckers, you know, you think, well, is it quite?
And you mentioned that he's a very good genre writer. Apart from the style, what kind of innovations is he bringing to this? I mean, how does he bring to bear his own sort of style on the genre?
Well, he's amazing at convincing you. He's a bit like these soul-sucking twins, in fact, because you're convinced these people are real. You sympathise with them. You want the stories to end badly. And time after time, and this is what builds the tension up and up, you know, these people are deceived, or people are not what they appear to be. And your horror at discovering that once again, you know, mortals have been trapped, just grows and grows. So that's very, very clever. He's very good at dialogue. He is quite sort of technically innovative. For instance, the first story in Slade House began as a short story on Twitter. And actually, that worked really, really well. So it was interesting seeing how he'd sort of subtly changed it for this novel or novella.
Interesting. And I mean, the story is kind of, it's characteristically ambitious for Mitchell. I mean, it spans five decades from the 1970s to the present day. How does he manage to kind of cover that vast expanse of time?
Well, with total assurance. I mean, you get these sort of tiny details about perhaps what people are drinking, the language they're using, but there's never a moment where you think, oh, I remember the 1980s and it just wasn't like that. You're instantly convinced this is true. And this is part of this very clever trick that these horrible predatory twins are playing on their victims, because their victims are also convinced that the house is true and real and the people they meet in it. And then it slowly becomes, or quite quickly becomes, apparent that their brains are being manipulated and they're just prey.
That's Slade House by David Mitchell, which is out now, published by Scepter. We're going to move on now to the first book in a new trilogy for young adults. The book is called The Wolf Wilder by Catherine Rundell, and it's hotly tipped as a work to look out for in this genre. Amanda, first, tell us a little bit about the author, Catherine Rundell, for people who don't know her work.
Well, Catherine Rundell is very young. She's, I think, under 25, and she's one of the youngest fellows of All Souls College, Oxford. Which is quite something to pull off. She won the Costa Prize for Rooftoppers, a previous novel. She's really interesting. She's a bit like Philip Pullman. She's got this beautiful storytelling voice that you instantly trust. And the heroine, how the Wolf Wilder begins, is, "It was a dark and stormy girl." And, you know, the moment you read that sentence, you want to find out more. And it's a quite wonderful story. You could read this as a 9-year-old and you could read this as a 90-year-old, and it would still be a really absorbing story, because what she's found out, she actually lived in Russia herself, I think, for a while, is that in pre-revolutionary Russia, aristocrats liked to make pets of wolves. Wolves were thought to bring good luck. But of course, wolves can't be tamed. And so inevitably disasters would happen. And because wolves were good luck, you couldn't kill them. So in this book, what these aristocrats do is they send the wolves to this mother and daughter, Marina and Feodora. Feodora is the heroine, to be rewilded, to be taught how to be wild wolves again. Now, this is a wonderful idea. I mean, there are two kinds of wolves classically in children's books. One are the sort of bad wolves, the Little Red Riding Hood, the wolves of Willoughby Chase, you know, the predators. And the other are the really good wolves, the wolves that save Mowgli in the Jungle Book, or Torak and Michelle Paver's Wolf Brother. And these wolves are very much the second sort of wolves, because this girl, Feodora, not only totally understands these wolves and wants them to have their liberty, which is, of course, always so appealing to a child, but she has to escape with them to save her mother from this appalling General Rostov, who hates wolves and who captures her mother, and he's going to have her executed in St. Petersburg. So this is a fantastic adventure, you know, full of snow and guns and fights and, you know, plots and things. And you somehow, such as the magic of her voice, you believe every word of it. Right. You know, you believe that a young girl could actually march into St. Petersburg, even if she has no weapons and no clothes, and sort of blag her way into the prison to save her mum. It's absolutely fabulous story.
Sounds incredible. I mean, this genre of young adult fiction has been, I guess, hotly watched since the likes of Harry Potter, because of, I mean, it can have such huge commercial success as well if you have film rights and all the rest of it. Do you see this as being kind of the next big thing in that sense, the next Harry Potter or something like that?
Well, it would be lovely if it were, because it's such a great story. But there's always a problem, which is the animals. I mean, I know that Michelle Paver's Wolf Brothers, also been, which was auctioned ages ago by Ridley Scott, has also run into this problem. Because if you're showing real animals, real wolves, how do you make them both scary and tame enough to be with actors? I think things like Game of Thrones has shown that you can actually do some of this. But I would love it if this were a film. I think it's a fantastic book. I'm sure it's going to win loads of prizes. And I would certainly recommend it to anyone who was looking for a book to give to a younger reader for Christmas.
Right. And in terms of, I mean, lots of people have said it kind of, it reminds them of Philip Pullman's work. Mm. What sort of similarities, I mean, you mentioned the kind of great storytelling. Are there any other similarities that we should be looking out for?
It's the beauty of the language. It's just this, it's not at all difficult to read, but it's never writing down. That's why I say you could read it as an adult. It's discussing quite complicated ideas about freedom and animal, the difference between animals and humans and good and bad and so on. But you never feel patronized. You never feel that you're being sold short. I mean, this is a superbly intelligent young woman, and she's just writing as naturally as a bird sings. It's wonderful. She's a real discovery.
That was The Wolf Wilder by Catherine Rundell, and it's out now, published by Bloomsbury. We're going to end this show with a murder mystery by the author Andrew Martin. In his upcoming book, The Yellow Diamond, Detective Quinn is shot whilst investigating the super rich of London. Blake Reynolds takes over the investigation and ends up on Quinn's trail of a jewellery theft. Amanda, without giving too much away, hopefully, how does the story unfold from there?
Well, it's absolutely delightful. It's very funny. It's very different from what Andrew Martin, who's best known for his Jim Stringer railway detective novel series before, has written. And it reminded me a little bit of those lovely 1930s detective novels about Lord Peter Wimsey by Dorothy L. Sayers and Marjorie Allam's Albert Campion, in that there's a lot in here about the lives of the super rich, but not really the British super rich, which were also cross about. The people were even crosser about, which is the Russian oligarchs. And, it's largely set in Mayfair and Bond Street, with bits of Hampstead, North London. And it's terrific, this. It just goes like the clappers. It begins with a super rich young man being stabbed in the eye and murdered on Hampstead Heath. And it goes on from there. And there are fast yachts and fast cars. And this very engaging detective, Blake Reynolds, who is, of course, very humble and not from this world at all, and who sort of being instructed how to blend in by Quinn's assistant, this rather snooty woman called Victoria, who tells him what clothes to wear and how to go. So part of the fun is that fun of sort of snooping on a world that most of us don't have access to. But it's also a cracking good read. It's a really fun murder mystery, which, does get solved. And there are lots of exciting moments and car chases and things. It just sort of delivers. And, it makes me a bit sad that people like J.K. Rowling as Robert Galbraith have had this huge publicity for the Cormorant Strike detective stories, which is sort of doing the same thing. But, to me, this is as good and it's just as knowledgeable. I mean, I don't know where he gets this knowledge from. He's a former journalist, so I imagine he knows how to research it. But it's sort of more masculine. It's about the man's view of this world in which people can buy enormous diamonds and Porsches and racing yachts and things. And it's just delightful.
Yeah. I wanted to come back to that point you made about it being about the super rich, that kind of milieu. It's interesting. I mean, do you think that is, there's a political point being made here, or is it more just a kind of useful plot device to sort of take the story forward?
I think it's a bit of both, because we're all, if we're honest, absolutely fascinated by this world. But there is a lot of disquiet about these huge sums of money that have been washing around the capital and how it may possibly be corrupting not just people's lives, but even things like the police force. I mean, it is, it's quite clever, this book. And, what you take away from it is up to you. But it's interesting that this kind of novel, detective novel, is coming back when it originally began in the Depression of the 1930s. I think that's,
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
People who kind of love crime fiction novels, they must by now be pretty wise to the devices that are used in these novels. I mean, has Andrew Martin kind of done any updating of these tropes, or is there a fresh approach here?
I think the freshness is really in the characters. I think, you know, you're not hugely surprised by the outcome of this, but it's a psychology. You know, it's again, like with Rayling's Cormorant Strike character, you like the detective. You want him to succeed. You feel sympathetic. You know that his girlfriend is certainly cheating on him and that he's probably going to be disappointed in love. But, you know, all these things are very comforting and familiar. But it's really him that you like. You want him to succeed, and you are fascinated, even if you know London very, very well. It's very interesting seeing it through this kind of lens.
Great. That's Blake Reynolds, who is the lead character in Yellow Diamond, The Yellow Diamond by Andrew Martin, which will be available to buy on the 5th of November, and it's published by Faber and Faber. Well, I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Amanda Craig, thank you very much for joining us. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our weekly film review. But for the time being, thanks very much for tuning in, and goodbye.